it's not often that a guest makes me teary or emotional. And when Lesego Zulu popped in to tell the story, the life-changing story of her time with her husband, Gugu, and how they parted and how Mount Kilimanjaro claimed him, it was a very, very sad, touching, poignant moment for all of us. Apart from her very apparent strength, she has a way of drawing the emotion out of you and kind of helping everybody, I think, who's ever lost anyone to understand what it must be like to have someone, especially who's such a part of South African society and such a part of our general awareness, and to lose that person so publicly was something that I don't think many of us will experience. But through her words and through her story, and most of all, through her strength of character, I think we all got to share in something that was very empowering. And by the end of it, when she left the studio, there was a whole lot of love in the room. CliffCentral.com. Hey, first of all, good morning, gorgeous. How are you?
I'm good. How are you,
Gareth? It's so nice to see you.
Good to see you, too.
Make yourself comfortable. Have you got something to drink here? Someone looking at you. Lucas, are you looking after her?
I am.
You're ignoring the poor woman.
I'll bring you a bottle of water now.
Thank you.
Lesego Zulu is our guest this morning. So it's your gran who lives there.
And no, she lives in Mafeking in the northwest.
And have they been affected?
She actually called my mom and said it's been raining nonstop. She's so scared to go outside.
Wow. I know that I've got a river in front of my house. You must see this thing. It's like a lake now.
Oh, is it going to go over and do damage? Do you know how to swim?
You see, I sort of like these extreme weather events because it makes things exciting. Yeah, if it rains and it just goes away after an hour, but when there's flooding and, you know, you see suddenly like we humans are so unimportant. Nature is just so powerful.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, you're reminded of your place.
Definitely.
In the food chain.
Yeah, so Lesego, let's just start with, first of all, I'm really happy to see you. And there's lots that we've got to talk about besides the obvious and the thing that you must be in some ways tired of talking about because it's such a personal sort of story. But today is the anniversary.
Yeah, it's our third wedding anniversary today.
Jeez, I'm so sorry. I didn't know when we asked you to come in today that it was going to be today. I genuinely didn't know that.
That's fine. I actually did. When Mabale gave me three different dates, I was like, I'll pick that one.
Well, I wish we had you both here, obviously, a day like today.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, 3 years ago was a happy day. And sometimes you just get a person on loan for a little while, right?
Yeah. Absolutely. That's how life is. You literally don't know what tomorrow holds for you.
Well, we're talking about Gugu Zulu, who's no longer with us, who less than a year ago.
7 months.
Was lost to us on Kilimanjaro during a brave attempt at the mountain, which the Nelson Mandela Foundation organized. A bunch of people went up. And Gugu didn't make it back down.
Yeah.
And, you know, you were there for the whole thing.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't want to bring back ugly or difficult memories, but I think that the story for lots of people is a very moving one.
It is, and I actually, Gareth, I don't mind talking about it. For me, it's very cathartic, and it's the way I'm dealing with it. I talk about it every opportunity I get. I'm one of those people that does a lot of self-talk, and that's how I get through all situations. So I've probably told the story a good 50 times. You know, if anyone's got an ear to listen, I just...
Well,
that's how I deal with things.
We only heard about it. I only heard about it from like the news.
Yeah.
And we were shocked.
Mm.
And then that shock turns to disbelief. And then after the disbelief, I suppose you get a bit angry because you think, well, there's this man in the prime of his life. He's got a young family. There's you. I thought of you because, you know, once someone has died, it's not really about them anymore. It's who's left. And I thought, this has got to be so hard.
Mm.
And there's lots of stuff that came into it after that, like, you know, how little money there actually is in motorsport in South Africa.
Oh, yeah.
Which we've got to talk about, too, because everybody goes, oh, you know, Gugu Zulu this. But no one was paying him a fortune to do what he was doing. And it wasn't easy for you guys from a financial point of view. There was a lot of challenge.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, and everybody goes, oh, well, he was this big superstar motorsport racing guy. And he must have been, you must have been sitting on piles of money. Which is bullshit, right?
Absolutely.
So what happened? Let's just go back because you don't mind telling the story. So
no,
the way you experienced it, first of all, this was a trip that was organized by the Nelson Mandela Foundation. I know some of the people there, and the idea is a very good idea. Mm. They'd done it before.
Mm.
People like Jerry Ransetti, who's what's her name now? Jerry
Elsden.
Elsden, that's right. I always get it wrong. Mm. She went up, and Gugu and you two were invited along.
Yeah.
And you thought, wow, what an adventure.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, Mount Kilimanjaro has always been on our to-do list for a couple of years. And we almost kind of waited until there was a real reason to go up the mountain. The tour is actually organized by the Imbumba Foundation in association with the Nelson Mandela Foundation.
Okay.
Because they utilize the whole Trek for Mandela project, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
So, yes, we were invited and gladly took up the opportunity based on the reason why we were climbing, you know, to keep a girl child in school. And what actually happened was that a couple of days before we left, you know, postnasal drip is something that we often have in our house and we kind of deal with it. Most people have it.
I have it.
All the time. Mm. You know, you kind of just spray your throat, spray your nose. And
you don't think it's an issue.
It kind of, you know, it kind of just clears. And that's exactly what he was experiencing a couple of days before we left. And myself being a medical professional, I'm a biokineticist and I understand the body. I know how the body functions. The very day that we departed OR Tambo, I said to him, listen, speak to the doctor. You know, tell her what it is that you're experiencing and let's hear what she says because you're not 100% and I can see you're not 100%. So he did. He actually documented, the first part of the journey in a very weird way. You know, a lot of people will know that Googs loved taking photos, photos of things and people, selfies with other people and so on, but never did he turn the video on himself and take video diaries. And one of his video diaries that I found on his phone at about 1 a.m., the day before we started climbing, you know, I took a video diary and said, hi, video diary. You know, I'm not feeling so great, but I've spoken to the doctor and she says, perhaps I'm tired. You know, maybe I just need to get some rest and get some fluids in me. So, you know, that was, I guess, proof that he did actually do as I asked him to.
Mm-hmm.
We started the climb the following morning and, you know, I, knowing that you actually really shouldn't exercise when you're not well, I kept an eye on him without him knowing, without, you know, bringing attention to him not being well. He wasn't too badly, you know, ill. He wasn't ill, actually. Mm. But, you know, energy levels were low. He wasn't his usual bubbly self. You know, Cooks is a people's person. Yeah, he's always chatting
and
to
you
people.
Know him. You knew him so well that you could tell he wasn't at 100%.
Absolutely.
Sure.
And he was trying to mask it as much as possible. So what I did, being me, is I made sure that I walked ahead of him at all times to keep him slow.
Hmm.
And, you know, every now and then I would look back. I mean, we were in a big group of 40 people and people who know Googs and I, we're not stuck to the hip. You know, when we're in a big group of people, we mingle.
You both did your own thing. I mean, you didn't try and get in the car with him while he was racing.
Or didn't you?
That was spare time.
Keep a tracker on him.
So I walked ahead of him and every now and then I'd look back and check up on him and, you know, stop.
By the way, I like couples like that. The ones who hold each other's hands the whole time. I don't think they really, I think they just don't trust each other.
That's claustrophobic.
Don't you think? There's something weird about that.
Yeah. So I did that for the first 2 days and, you know, he did report to the doctor every single day and he was popping the strepsils and, you know, nasal sprays and all of that. What eventually transpired the day before he passed away, he changed the plan. I think Gugu was starting to struggle to a point where he didn't want attention on him.
Mm-hmm.
He really wanted to summit Mount Kilimanjaro. It was a big thing for him. And he changed the plan in that the big group of 42 people had been split into two, the slower people and the pretty fit people. And we were always in the fit group because physically active. And the night before he passed, it was actually on Saturday night. He didn't even tell me himself. He asked a fellow teammate to tell me that, you know, the following day, the Sunday morning, he is going to join the first group. And I said to him, but why? Because the first group leaves a whole hour before everybody. They kind of get a head start.
And he didn't want you to be with him in that
group. No, he it's a bit of a catch-22 because I sit here and I'm like, did you want me? I have questions, you know, that I'm still sitting with, you know, did you want me to change it up and join you in the first group, or did you actually not want me to see you suffering? And that's one of the questions I'll ask him one day when I get to heaven. But it just so happened that the stubbornness in me got the better of me in that, you know, when I was told via the other friend in the group that he's joining the first group, I said to them, but why do you want to do that? You know, we're fit enough to keep up with the second group. Besides, if you're in the second group, you get an extra hour of sleep. Yeah. You need the sleep, you know? And besides, I'll be a bit selfish here. I love my sleep. I need that extra hour, you know? So it was two things. I was like, firstly, you need to rest that extra hour because you're not feeling 100%. Secondly, I love my sleep. So actually I'm going to take that extra hour. Yeah, he tried to get me to, I don't know, it was either or, you know, he was like, no, then come join us in the first group. And I was like, no.
I don't want to wake up that early.
No, why must I wake up?
I mean, let's be fair. At this point, the last thing in your mind is something really terrible is going to happen.
Absolutely.
It's really just, these are like the decisions about, oh, what time are you set your alarm tomorrow?
Yeah.
These are the things everybody decides themselves every night before they go to sleep.
Yeah.
That's all.
Yeah. Yeah.
You're not thinking something awful is going to happen. You certainly couldn't envisage what would happen.
No, not at all. Not at all. So cut a long story short, he was stubborn and so was I, and we kind of stuck to our guns. Following morning, he woke up an hour earlier to join the first group. But he did make sure that I was fine. You know, he woke me up before he went out for breakfast. And one thing people don't know is that on Kilimanjaro, you don't really take a shower. They give you a small bowl of warm water and you kind of just do.
Get into the critical area.
The critical area. So he was still, So he was still the gentleman, you know, he woke me up and he went out and got my bowl of warm water. And he said, well, here you go. You wake up now. I'm off to breakfast and we're going to leave shortly. And before he left to start an hour earlier, he came and, you know, gave me a hug, gave me a kiss and said, I'll see you later. I wasn't okay. I was, like I said to you, we're not really stuck at the hip, but we're always together and we do things together. And I woke up in a really bad mood. Like I just wasn't okay. And I knew something wasn't quite right. Do you know when your subconscious can sense that something is not right? That whole day I was in a crappy mood. I didn't want to talk to anybody. I was listening to music, trying to pep myself up. And bumped into them at halfway at the lunch spot. And he didn't say much, just gave me a hug and a kiss. And continued. We eventually, late afternoon, got to the next camp called Kibo. Very high altitude. They call it headache camp.
So this is where you struggle to breathe because the air is
so
thin.
Absolutely. This is where you start struggling to breathe. That's where you have a Mursa headache.
There's no vegetation at this level, right?
It's hardly too high. There's none. There's none. It's just rocks.
It's rocks. And
it's rocks.
It's very desolate. It's almost, it's desert.
Yeah.
Is it cold?
Freezing.
Steep desert. Steep, cold desert.
Freezing cold. I got there and I found him sitting Well, I could see him from a distance as I was approaching, because obviously he got there before me. He was sitting under the sign. So at every single camp, as you arrive, there's a sign that tells you obviously the name of the camp and what altitude you're at and how far you are from the next camp and how far you are from the previous camp, that type of thing. And we always took pictures next to these signs. And as I approached, I was a couple of meters away. He stood up, walked up to me, and we embraced for what felt like forever and just broke down into tears. I had had a horrible day because I didn't have him around. I didn't need him stuck at my hip.
Sure.
But I needed to see him. I'm just used to...
But like a lot of emotion there.
A lot of emotion.
For not really that much of a reason.
You know what I mean? I had, during that day, I had moments where I was crying. I didn't understand why. I had really low moments.
Do you believe in signs?
Yes.
Do you believe in that stuff?
I do. Yeah, it was an emotional day. The previous days leading up to this, I was bubbly. I was chatting to the porters. I was learning Swahili. I was singing songs. Mm. And on that specific day, I couldn't get myself to that. Something wasn't quite right, and I couldn't put my finger on it.
It feels almost like something hanging on you.
Yes. Yes. And
other people were okay.
Other people were okay.
So it wasn't just because you were high up.
Yeah, absolutely. And people kept on looking at me like, oh, okay, something's different today. What's going on? I tried to hide the tears. You know, every now and then I was crying and I was trying to sing songs. And I literally had headphones on the entire day.
Wow.
Because I needed a distraction. My soul was low. Nonetheless, we got to Kibo, embraced, cried, and, you know, eventually we let go. And he said to me, I need to go see the doctor. And I said to him, yeah, but what about our photo? You know, because that's what we were doing the whole time, documenting this thing. So we walked up to the sign and we took a picture. But, you know, till today, I look at those last three pictures we took and you can visibly see that he's not okay. You know, yes, he gave me that last thumbs up. He was a big thumbs up guy when it came to pictures. But you can see that that's just not him. And I still didn't really pick it up.
Yeah, and even if you had, I mean, you say you believe in signs, and I can read that into what you're saying, but you don't think this guy's not going to be here tomorrow.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
You go, well, he's going to, you know, the worst that'll happen is he's not going to feel well. He might have to go down before us.
Yeah.
It's not a big deal.
Exactly.
People don't die that easily on Kilimanjaro.
No,
come on, let's do this.
Exactly.
Plus, this is a fit, happy, healthy dude. You two are both very athletic, competitive.
Yeah.
Sure.
And I even remember at some point, you know, before the emergency, the real emergency happened and we had to descend, there's a time when the tour, our guide, I don't know what they call him, but Busiso Vilane, the guy who's summited.
Sure.
All seven summits.
Yeah, he's like your Sherpa, basically.
Yeah.
He's kind of your, yeah.
He came up to me and he's like, how's Kuku doing? And I said, not so great, you know?
Yeah.
And he said to me, you know, what would you do if a call is made for him to descend before you summit? And I said, oh, I'd go down with him. You know,
sure.
We can always come back another day.
Sure.
The mountain will always be here.
So you, even then, there wasn't this craziness that, oh no, I'm going to carry on.
No.
We're going to summit anyway.
No. Yeah. If a medical doctor says, listen, you need to descend because you're not well, you got to listen.
So in other words, you weren't going to be rebellious.
No. You can be rebellious to a certain point.
Sure.
But you got to be real with yourself. You got to listen to your body. I'm one person that's very in tune with my body. And when I'm not feeling well and I'm training for that triathlon or whatever it is, I'm like, oh, one day is not going to hurt me.
Sure.
You know, but also the mountain will always be there. And that was my thing. Then, you know, he tried to twist my arm and he's like, you know, last year we had Mr. and Mrs. Singh and Mr. Singh got ill and he gave Mrs. Singh the blessing to continue and she went and summited. And I said, but I'm not Mrs. Singh.
No, you want to go
I'm
down
Mrs.
with him
Zulu.
If he goes down. Yeah, sure.
I'm Mrs. Zulu. If my husband is not well, I will descend with him.
And then what happened?
You
took the pictures.
Took the picture. He left, went to go find the doctor while I went searching for the hut where you need to sign in because you need to sign the register at every point on the mountain. Found my way to the dormitory where we were staying. I think if I remember correctly, were about 15 people or so in each dormitory. And I found the dormitory. When I got there, he was busy with the doctor and he was getting a drip put in. And I asked, you know, why is he getting a drip? And I was told, his energy levels are very low. So, you know, giving him a bit of a booster. Couple of hours, this booster wasn't working. I remember sitting next to his bed and I asked him, how are you feeling? And he said, you know, it's so weird. I'm not feeling any pain. I'm just exhausted. So I said to him, oh, okay. Then lie down, take a nap. You know, I'll wake you up in a couple of hours' time. I think by then it was probably around 5, 6 p.m. And we were due to wake up for tea at 10 p.m. And leave for the summit at 11. So I said to him, it's fine, you know, get some rest and let's see how it goes. Let's hope you wake up feeling better. What transpired over the next couple of hours was he fell asleep. He started snoring funny. I know how he snores when he's not well.
Like irregular breathing almost.
Not even irregular. It wasn't irregular at all. It was just this loud, gurgling snore, unsettling, very unsettling. Everybody in the room could hear it. It just didn't sound right. And I remember asking the doctor to come in. You know, I was like, this doesn't sound right. What is this? And she had no idea what it was. Cut a long story short, around 9 p.m., a call was made for us to descend.
Okay.
Because he was in trouble.
Okay.
We got a stretcher.
Like respiratory trouble?
Yeah.
Okay.
Respiratory trouble. There was no respiratory trouble earlier.
Yeah.
He was fine. But at about 9 p.m. there was respiratory trouble and a call was made by the doctor that we need to descend. So we got a stretcher. He was pulled onto the stretcher. And then started our 8-hour journey down the mountain in the dark.
It's kind of terrifying.
With a headlamp.
Yeah.
Yeah. We probably, I think between myself, how many were we? We were probably about 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. We were probably about 8 people. I think we had 3 or 4 headlamps. And a headlamp is not that dark.
No.
Now imagine you're in the mountain.
You're not going down flat ground either.
Absolutely. Absolutely. It's exhausting.
Some people say climbing down is harder than climbing up.
It is.
It is.
It is. Even more in the dark.
So 8 hours of this.
9 p.m. till 5 a.m. We reached the bottom at 5 a.m.
And is he getting any better or worse on the way down, or is it the same?
His heart rate was getting better, so I was hopeful. He actually had 2 Fitbits on. And that's how we were monitoring his heart rate.
Okay.
You know, I kept on checking it. It was incredibly high when we were leaving the mountain.
Yeah.
You know, like marathon pace type of heart rate, 180 something. Yeah. That's when I knew he was in trouble. But at the same time, I was grateful that there's a heart rate.
Yeah.
You know, it's like a catch for you too. And you're like,
sure.
Yeah. So he was getting better. The heart rate was descending. I was hopeful. I was, you know, crossing fingers. And
okay. And the breathing?
You know what? I think my subconscious protected me a lot. I didn't want to monitor too much.
Okay. Yeah.
I was like, heart rate, great.
You know the body.
Yeah.
And this is your job. This is what you studied. This is your area of expertise.
Yeah.
So you can get very caught up in it. And if you're monitoring every 5 seconds.
You're going to go crazy.
Yeah.
You're going to go crazy.
Okay. So now you're getting
because
it's almost daylight.
Wasn't even.
Still dark.
It was still dark. Even when we got to the rescue vehicle 8 hours later, it was still dark when we got into the vehicle at 5 a.m. And it was a good 45 to 50 minute drive to the hospital. Yeah. And during that drive, he let go. You know, when I think back to the whole story, I'm almost, it's bittersweet because I sit there and I'm like, He protected me all the way down, slowly letting go of life. Just to make sure that I get down to the bottom. Because if he had let go on the mountain, I don't know if I would have, I probably would have had to be put on a stretcher myself. So he made sure that we are on a smooth surface and we're back at the bottom. Because he let go before we got to the hospital.
What is that? What's that moment like where you realize, like, this is it? Because, you know, in the movies, it's always something dramatic.
Mm.
It's always something very obvious. Someone is just finished.
Mm.
And that's the end.
Mm.
You know, in the movies, people, there's always like a final moment.
Yeah.
But do you even know when it happens in a situation like this? You can't pinpoint exactly the moment that he leaves.
No, no, you can't. And I wasn't, I was, it got to a point where I was also protecting myself.
Mm.
I wasn't watching him like, you know, like an eagle.
No, sure.
You know, with our drive from the base of the mountain to the hospital, I sat in front of the vehicle and he was at the back with the porters. And I just asked them, you know, what's the heart rate? But I asked them once when we got into the vehicle and it was 60 something, which is very normal.
It's fine.
You and I sitting here.
Sure. And you want that low rates, because it means it's not stressed.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. So,
so how did you find out? Did you?
We got to the hospital. I didn't know that he was gone. Got to the hospital. He got wheeled into the emergency room. And probably about half an hour to 40 minutes later, I was called in by the doctors and informed. Yeah. They tried to bring him back. Yeah. Until today, you know, every now and then, every couple of days, I think back to that moment when the doctor said those words and just the disbelief. And I literally find myself just shaking my head because I'm like, how? Why? Who? Like, how come?
Mm.
When did it get that bad?
Yeah, there's no drama here.
No. No, none whatsoever. None whatsoever.
It must have been so confusing.
Mm. Mm. I remember, it was two lady doctors, and when they said that, I was like, no. Let me go see him. Like, I don't believe you.
Yeah.
You know, but as I got to him, there was this sense of, oh my goodness, really? And then almost instant acceptance or understanding, because there was actually a build-up. Yes, it was pretty instant. Mm. You know, some of us are used to seeing people being ill for so long, for months or weeks. But there was an actual build-up to all of this. There was a journey, that journey of coming down the mountain and knowing that
he's not
well.
Well, it's so symbolic in so many ways, right? I mean, it's like an allegory, like a metaphor.
Yeah.
And what you were saying just now is so powerful about how you think he was letting go the whole way down.
Yeah.
But not until he knew you were also safe.
Yeah. He was a gentleman right up until the end.
Unbelievable.
Mm.
Do you believe in destiny?
I do.
And even though it seems so unfair, have you found a way to rationalize why his life might have been so short? And so amazing and so energetic and so colorful.
So full.
Yeah.
So full. It all kind of is starting to make sense for me because who lives like that?
Yeah.
He lived an amazing life, you know, so packed. And I'm starting to believe that he was here for a purpose to do and leave.
Hmm.
You know, one thing that I have not done and I choose not to because I don't want to go crazy is ask why or get angry, because who's going to answer my why? No one's going to answer my why. I'm just going to end up just going mad. I'll find out the why when I die one day.
Well, I hope yours isn't going to be so soon.
No, no.
I mean, we like having you around, you know. one of you Zulus is enough. When you think about that mountain? I mean, would you ever be able to go back there? Do you think you need to? Do you think you need to go and...
I'm very competitive.
Do you think
there's
a bit of his... Do you think his soul, his spirit maybe still visits there? Do you think that's a place where you could find some closure?
No, his spirit is with me every day.
Yeah.
I am going back to the mountain. I am.
When?
It's unfinished, Gareth.
Have you decided on, like, it's going to happen soon?
It is happening this year.
Oh, wow. When did you make that decision?
I made that decision the minute we left Kilimanjaro to come back home. It's unfinished business, and that's not what us Zulus are about.
And you're going to do it for both of you?
Absolutely. We always finish what we start.
Has anyone close in your life said, don't?
They know not to.
They wouldn't dare.
Because no. I do what I want to do.
And you're going to do it anyway.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
I was taken aback, not because I didn't think he was one of the people who everybody in this country loved to pieces, but you must have been surprised too by the amount of love and the outpouring of, you know, sympathy, mm-hmm. The feeling, people who didn't know him even.
Yeah.
Who felt that he had in some way made a difference in their lives. I mean, that must have felt, it's not very comforting because he's still gone.
Yeah.
But it must have felt good, and he would have smiled about that.
Yeah. you know, every time I think back to that, the 2 weeks after Gogs passed.
Because it still took you a week to get back, right?
It took us, no, he passed away on a Monday and we were home by Thursday night.
It felt like a long time.
It did. It did. It did. But for me, you know, till today, I say thank goodness for my sister-in-law and for my business partner, Kitiwe.
Uh-huh.
Because the minute they heard that morning, that early morning, Leander booked her flight to Tanzania, and so did Kitty. They took different routes. One went via Kenya and the other one was, yeah, Kenya. The other one went via Dar es Salaam.
But they were both there to meet you.
And they both got there at 10 p.m. that night. I was never alone. And they, yeah, I'm forever grateful.
What goes through your mind when you're staring there looking at him and he's not alive?
You know, Gareth, he looked so peaceful. I think I saw Googs, let me think, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 times between him passing and him being buried. And he was just at peace.
Does it take away some of the fear of dying from you?
It actually did. It actually did, because seeing him lying there, still, and at peace, I didn't even shed a tear. I thought, oh, like, he looked godly.
Hmm. That's something.
Yeah.
What about all these people who were saying how much they missed him, but they didn't support him in life? I mean, that must irritate you, because people suddenly develop all this virtue. When somebody dies and they're suddenly your best friend and they come out of the woodwork and they're there at the big funeral and all of that
and
stuff.
And they all want to be interviewed by the media.
Oh, yeah. They all like, oh, I knew Gugu and he was our friend and, you know, we were so close. And you think, and you look at these people and you think, who the hell are you and where do you come from and how come I've never seen you in our, you know, 2.5 years of marriage?
In our 15 years of being together.
Yeah. Where were you?
Yeah. You know, I try not to judge people.
No, and you don't want to. In that moment, the last thing in your mind is how they feel or how you feel about them.
So I literally would just smile and say, oh, it's good to see you. Welcome back.
But let's also talk about this idea. People thought, oh, well, because he's a famous guy and because you were a famous couple, I mean, both of you were well known to people, that you guys were living this celebrity life, that you had this amazing carefree existence, plenty of money. Mm-mm. It was just great to be you guys. Mm-mm. And the reality is, like, motorsport didn't pay.
Motorsport is a hobby in our country.
And even for someone like Gugu, who is so well known, not just in this country, but across the world?
Gugu had to literally hold down 3-4 jobs at one time.
And you had to have your income just absolutely. So that you guys could support yourself.
Absolutely. Motorsport is a hobby in this country. Just because you're a car racer doesn't mean that you have millions in your bank account.
Mm.
You know, everybody knows that Gugu had work in television and, you know, whenever there's a Formula One race, he had a radio job and he did emceeing and he had to really work it in order for us to survive, you know, because we obviously were not able to survive just on my own income. So we both had to really work hard. So, yeah, there are no millions that I'm sitting on. And people actually think that I am sitting on millions because I get random emails, Gareth, you won't believe it, from people asking me to help them financially since my husband passed away. And I'm like, are you kidding me?
But can I, again, tell me if I'm getting into your business here, and I don't want to. But when someone dies, especially when you don't expect them to, and you guys didn't have maybe all the prep in the world because you were young people, you just started your life together, you were both in the peak of physical health. The last thing I think about, or Mubs thinks about, is, oh, we got to prepare for the worst.
Mm.
And when that happens, like, money is an issue no matter how much or how little you have, right?
Absolutely.
So how did you manage in those months afterwards where you had to find this money? I mean, many of us are living in debt anyway. Many of us are living on bonds, all kinds of things. And now suddenly it's just you.
Yeah.
And the estate might be tied up if there is money.
It is.
And even if there isn't, it's still tied up?
Yeah.
You're kidding me.
Yeah. Still tied up. I'm a survivor, Gareth.
No, I know that.
I don't know how. It's not easy. I'll tell you that much. I had incredible support with laying him to rest. I didn't have to worry about anything. But after that, obviously, the day-to-day, I work. But obviously, you know, I've obviously gone from a two-income household to one.
Mm.
I can tell you it's not easy. But I find a way.
Listen, that's probably the part that it's not glamorous or exciting or interesting, and people don't write about it in magazines, and it doesn't get reported in the you know, the epilogue or the autobiography. But that's the stuff, the day to day, that makes it really hard.
Yeah, but you just find a way, you know. Without getting into too much detail, you find a way.
But you, I mean, you've got your business, and you mentioned Kitiwe just now. What are you guys doing? What are you up to?
So we run Pop-Up Gym. There's the corporate side of Pop-Up Gym. And
give it a plug, is what I'm saying.
Yeah. No, thanks, Gareth. We run a company.
I mean, we're going to give you some advertising, for God's sake.
We run a company called Pop-Up Gym, and it's basically about demystifying keeping healthy and fit, you know, which is very important for life. We found that a lot of people make excuses for not exercising and eating healthy. So we pretty much bring it to you. So with the corporate side of Pop-Up Gym, which is what we run Mondays to Fridays, and we don't talk much about it because the corporates want it hush hush.
Mm.
You know, we do wellness days for corporates.
This is a brilliant idea.
Yeah. Yeah.
You go to them.
We go to you. And on a daily basis, we'll organize a trainer to come and physically train your people at your offices. You know how people make excuses that, oh no, I have to leave home at 5 o'clock to get to work, and then I only knock off at 7. Listen, at 5 p.m. there will be a yoga class or a Pilates class or Tai Chi.
And most of these big companies have got the space.
Yeah, and we don't need much space. We don't need a gym. We either need a parking lot or a big patch of grass. And things happen.
Do you think people, because I've got to tell you, you are in the most magnificent shape.
She always has
Yes.
been. Thank you.
I don't know what Kitiwe looks like, but if you
she
two,
looks amazing.
Yeah, if you two together pitch up, it's like a, no one can really make an excuse around you. You know? They're going to want to be as good looking as
but
you
that's
two
the thing. So we're trying to demystify the whole thing. So there's that's the corporate side of the business. And then there's the public activations where we actually have one this coming Saturday, but it's sold out already. Wow. But we do have another one next week Saturday. So we've got the one this Saturday at Monte Cassino. Right. And our public activations are pretty much about, let's get a big group of people together, 250. Very, mm-hmm. It's small, but it's not, you know, because we want to touch lives. That's why we keep it small. Mm. And let's talk healthy eating and exercise and have fun. And we use these silent disco headphones where you're almost in your own world. So the music is here. It's not
That's
pumping
amazing.
Loud. And it's so amazing to watch how people switch off and they just get into the moment. So what we do is you get there, you get a body assessment because we want people to understand their bodies and understand where they are, fat percentage, you know.
Be honest with yourself.
Be honest with yourself.
Because some people, they convince themselves, no, I'm not so bad, or I'll be okay, but they're a big fat mess.
You know what I mean? And the truth of the matter is my goals, my body and my ballet's body are different.
It's not just your hips, honey. It's everything.
Me and my belly. So we offer the body assessments, and then we offer healthy eating advice, you know, during the water breaks. But then we'll have fun with Zumba and aerobics and dance fitness or whatever it is that we've chosen for that specific day. And we've also introduced a kids section because we know kids also need to keep healthy and fit. Mm. So with the kids, it's also basic height and weight measurements, and come, let's talk about how to pack your lunch and what is regarded as healthy food for your heart to be healthy and all of that. So yeah, that is the pop-up gym activation.
That's a very, very interesting business. Is there anyone have you got competition in that field?
There is competition, but
you must be the front and center people. You know,
we're working hard to maintain that.
Yeah, you're the go-to people when it comes to this.
Yeah,
and it's a totally original idea.
It is. But there's so many trainers out there. Everyone's trying to, you know, get
but
a slice
no,
of the.
Don't go to the corporates.
Of the pie and all of that. Yeah, absolutely.
I don't know that they can combine all these different things, yoga and Zumba and all the rest of it. I mean, it's very clever.
Yeah.
Okay. Again. In no intention on my part to be insensitive, but when you're a young, good-looking woman like you, your life is still ahead of you in so many ways. Is there any possibility you could fall in love again?
Most probably. I believe in love. Love loves me.
Because when you lose someone so early in your life and you have such an intense relationship like you two had, and it's so public too, which adds extra pressures, you might be one of those people who says to yourself in a moment, and it could have happened once or twice, where you go, well, that's me.
Oh, no.
Never again.
Listen, if I was 70 and he passed away, maybe.
Good. This is healthy.
I'm only 32.
Right. I mean, can you imagine a world without any sex for the rest of this?
Gareth.
With this beautiful body. That would be like.
Oh, my gosh. I hope my mother's not listening to this.
I know. I hope so, too. Because I'll tell you something. You are like a hotter, younger Jada Pinkett to me. And if she swore off sex, if something happened to Will Smith and she said she's never having sex again, I would go over to her house and I'd say to her, yeah, I'm going to talk some sense into you, insane woman. You know?
Oh,
yeah, I mean, it's almost like you've lived a whole life in one third of yours.
Oh, man.
And now you get to live another two thirds.
Yeah, yeah. A beautiful chapter was written by Googs and I.
In some ways, do you feel like it prioritizes stuff? It figures it in your world. The stuff that ordinary people wake up, and I mean no disrespect to those of us who have to worry about this shit daily. Mm. You know, you think about your bank balance and your health, and you think about your relationships, and you think about your career. Mm. But you have, because of what you've been through, you have this ability now to very quickly figure out what's actually important.
Yeah. Yeah. But I'm one person that believes in balance. And I think of things holistically. So, yes, there's the bank balance and the day-to-day and all, you know, everything that encompasses life. I believe in balance. Mm. And I'm figuring my way around each day as it comes.
You're not going to wake up in the morning and go, oh, that traffic light was red. This is just the worst day ever.
No, no.
Somehow you're able to get through those things.
I'm able to get through those things because if it doesn't kill you, like, I don't know. You know, I was having a conversation with a journalist last week about motherhood and how I'm managing. And yeah. I said to her, you know,
we haven't even got into that.
Yeah, we'll get to that just now. But you just, there's just something that happens in your mind where you say, this is worth stressing about. And this is not.
Hmm. So what does still stress you out? Because you seem very, very sorted out. I mean, we have a lot of guests in here. Some of them very successful people, done amazing things in their lives. And they still get, you know, stressed out by stuff. Mm. What bothers you?
The bank balance.
Yeah. Hell yeah.
The bank balance. That's the one stressor because I want a comfortable life for my daughter. Not even me. Take me out of the equation.
How's she? I mean, what's she up to?
Oh,
she's a tiny little girl.
She's still amazing. She's my reason for getting up every morning. My little one is now, today she's 20 months.
Today?
Today she's 20 months old. She is, oh my gosh, she's my reason for waking up every day. She puts a smile on my face every day. I love, love, love motherhood. It's the best thing ever, Gareth. I never thought.
Yeah, but if you said it was the fourth best thing ever, we'd all look at you.
No. It is the best thing ever. I'm enjoying.
What if you said, oh, I really love Zumba more? People would think you're a sociopath.
I don't say that just to please people. Uh-huh. I'm actually very genuine about the fact that I love motherhood. You know, I was telling someone the other day that randomly, I mean, my daughter sleeps very well, right? Mm. But randomly, the one night, she woke up at 3 o'clock in the morning. She sits up and she's crying to get my attention. So I wake up and I'm like, what's wrong, my baby? Mm. And she points to the bedroom door. So I'm like, okay, because usually she points at what she wants. So I pick her up and I take her to the bedroom door and she opens it. So I'm like, okay, where are we going? We go down the stairs. When we get downstairs, she gives me the TV remote and I'm like, oh, goodness. Okay. She does that when she wants to watch Barney. It's 3 o'clock in the morning.
Yeah, there's no Barney.
So I gave her what she wanted. I do that because I want my daughter to grow up knowing that she can always come to mom for whatever she wants.
Mm-hmm. But my God, at 3 a.m.
No, but Gareth,
you've got work to do.
Can I tell you something? Can I tell you where my mindset is around raising my little one?
Yeah.
There's no need to stress about sleep.
Uh-huh.
I have so many mothers that I chat to and they're like, oh, I'm so sleep deprived. Hello, you've been sleeping for 30 odd years. This little person has no grasp of what sleeping patterns are. Yeah. So nonetheless, she gave me the remote. I was like, okay, my baby. So it's Barney time. I switch it on. 10 minutes later, she's like, okay, I'm bored. She goes and grabs one of her balls, like one of those soccer balls.
Yeah.
She gives it to me. It's like, okay, so it's time for catch. Here you go, my baby. I throw it to her.
Right.
And this happened a couple of times. And then she just went and took one of the scatter cushions off the couch, put it on the floor on her play mat, laid down, put her head down, and that was it. All of 15, 20 minutes, and it was time to go back to bed.
So did you just make a bed next to her and go to sleep?
No, I picked her up and I took her back up,
okay.
Got her into bed, and we slept. But if I was somebody else, I'd be stressing. You need to go to bed. It's moments like that are so beautiful for me because I'm like, she just wanted a little bit of Barney and, you know, a little bit of catch. 15, 20 minutes later, we're back to bed. I could have said no.
You know, you're making it very difficult. One day when she has a husband, he's going to be expected to turn on the TV when she wants to give her a ball, put the scatter cushion there for her. She's going to be a little princess.
She is a princess. Her dad treated me like a queen, so she is a princess.
Does she remind you of him in a lot of ways?
She does. The smile. Her smile. My daughter loves smiling. She's always flashing smiles at me, even at 2 o'clock or 3 o'clock in the morning. And that was Googs.
Does it bother you that she won't know him like you knew him? Because she was too little.
It does. And I'm going to do as much as I can for her to know even just a little bit about her dad.
Well, you know what? It's a good thing then that we are alive in the time we're alive, because there will be lots of photos, lots of video.
Mm-hmm.
There'll be TV appearances.
Yeah.
There'll be moments that you and he shared that you can tell her about that are very personal, but that you even might have records of.
Absolutely.
You know, it must have been a lot harder for people if they'd had a very tiny baby and they'd lost their partner, you know, 30, 40 years ago.
Yeah.
As so many people in this country did. There's so many women who've raised kids on their own that don't know their parents.
Mm.
They don't know their dad.
I don't. My dad passed away when I was 2.
Isn't that interesting?
Yeah. I don't know my dad.
Do you remember anything about him? You don't have a picture in your head?
Not a thing.
Wow.
Not
And a here thing. It is repeating itself.
Yeah.
How does that make you feel?
For me, I sit there and I'm like, I hope this is not a pattern.
Yeah.
Hope it's not going to happen to my daughter. Because my mom lost her dad when she was 3 or 4.
So it's 3 generations now.
Yeah.
Well, break it. Come on.
Yeah. That's the plan.
Break it. And get yourself some hot young Ben 10 now. Just for the fun. Gugu would like that.
Listen, Gugu set a very high bar, very high standard.
You're not going to have a relationship. I'm saying just for fun and games. Come on. You know what? I know that we've got lots of friends in common.
Yeah.
I knew Gugu a little bit, by no means to the degree that some of you knew him.
Mm.
And I think he'd be very proud of you.
I think so too.
For what it's worth.
Yeah.
You know.
I think so too.
Love you lots.
Love you.
And come and visit us again.
I will.
Keep on doing all this good work.
Thank you, Gareth.
And when your daughter's old enough, you tell her that not all men are going to treat her as well as you seem to at 3 a.m.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
Love you.
Love you.
This has been amazing, but you're very... You're a very, very easy person to talk to.
Thank you.
And happy anniversary for what it's worth, you know. Would have been 3 years.
Yeah.
But I'm sure there's going to be a lot to look forward to. And a lot of great memories to go through.
Yeah. CliffCentral.com.